my primary care doctor couldn't give me the answer because they weren't Hartford Healthcare. Meanwhile, my chart isn't accessible. Now, I'm trying to find out if I have COVID and I'm caring for a 100-year-old woman. So I'm wondering, I understand that we're talking about job placement, but I'm wondering if so many times I've not been able to do something, whether it's go to a telehealth appointment or get results that I'm entitled to or other information, because my chart is so inaccessible. And I'm wondering if there's a way, because while it may not be a job placement thing, every one of your clients who's an adult who's visually impaired is not being able to access enormously important and information that every sighted person who has a computer is most likely able to access, and which doctors, like, they won't send emails anymore. You know, they're like, well, you have to access it through the my chart. I'm like, but I can't get to my chart. They used to just send me an email with the information I needed. Now they won't do it because it's not secure.
If we want to get any movement on that topic, Andrea, that's going to have to be taken up at a higher level, because in order to get organizations like Hartford Hospital and Yale to move the needle on that, we have to bring the weight of state agencies behind us to get them to listen, because otherwise
I understand, but that's what I'm saying. But this is a state agency. That's why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah. No, but you know what you should do? Really, to do that, communicate with Amy about that. Send her her an email.
Okay.
And that's the way to get the ball rolling, because there's no way that at our level we'll be able to make it happen.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. As I said, thank you. That's what I needed. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrea.
Sorry to derail the conversation.
No worries. That's what this is for. Any questions is fair game, so that's fine. Any other questions for Mary?
I do have a question. This is Catherine Guzman. I was curious whether or not there are any, and this sort of goes to children's services, but then also it is talking about job placement in the future, because dealing with children sort of working their way up to job placement, it's all, you know, the same thing, really. I'm trying to figure out whether we have any programs who are developing coding skills, you know, getting children into developing their technology chops. You know, this is a great field for people with any kind of visual impairment to go into, where there's a really good salary base, and if you get them at a younger age interested in coding and things like that, there are so many different programs. It could really help, you know, get them into a different kind of trajectory towards a different kind of, not just in folding things and sheets and things like that, but like an actual, like, you know, career kind of thing.
Right.
So I know quite a few people that do that, so I'm just trying to understand if BSBE does that. Sorry.
We definitely do. STEM is huge, like, right now. And we have so many, like more than you would ever imagine of our clients going to college for, you know, tech, you know, and you know, that type of coding job. We've actually, it's very lucrative too. Like, so we've had a lot of individuals coming out with great jobs.
I love to hear that. I always hear about these other types of jobs, and I really want to hear about these other,
one day I'll get that statistic as well, just how many very successful transition students we have, you know, like they just, you know, they go, some of them go to very good schools and come out with amazing jobs, like, you know, so there's a whole population there that for sure, you know, and they're very tech savvy, like you said. It doesn't matter who you are, like, if you're like under the age of, you know, a certain age coming out of high school, everybody is tech savvy. At least
I'm just at that age where I didn't have, I'm young enough that I grew up with some technology, but it certainly wasn't anything that I was taught, you know, at a very young age, whereas my son knows how to do everything, you know, has an iPad, you know, right, attached to him from birth almost, you know, it was crazy. So I'm just trying to understand, you know, what BSBE, how we, you know, reach out to the younger people who are maybe transitioning into trying to get jobs and stuff like that, to show them what's available in that way, if they're not already.
Really looking to build. It's one of the biggest goals that we have, our mentor program. So our transition counselor, as soon as we get our other counselors, we'll have a little bit more time to really focus on that. But that's the goal, is to be able to have our transition students working, they'll meet with some of our individuals who are working in those fields. This is what you need. This is what I do. I'm legally blind and I do it. We do have transition events that we bring our success stories in to talk to, a group of our high school students. So we've done that over the course of time. So that's the goal going forward, is that we're going to be able to place these our employed in whatever field that you're looking into, so they can meet and talk and figure out what are some of the goals. So that's definitely a goal of ours.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem.
Any other questions for Mary? Hi, Mary, thanks very much for an excellent report. And let's move on to the next agenda item. I'm sorry, here we go. Sorry, just follow that. Mary, thanks for an excellent report, and we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is COVID-19 updates and safety protocols. Andrew, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. That was lucky. I just had to step out to let some workmen into the thing. Anyway, we haven't really changed. I mean, as you've been hearing from people, we're out and about and going into people's homes and going into workplaces, and aren't required to wear masks in the building. It looked like maybe masks were going to get required again. In fact, Amy told me maybe a month or two ago that the latest uptick, we had more people at Aging and Disability out on COVID than at any time during the two-year pandemic, with the latest, version. And I can't even keep track of the names, Epsilon, Delta, Omicron, I don't know. And but the one that was hitting big and that brought us up to 13% positive test rates among all test takers was had a big effect. But mostly, like me, I got it. Mostly, the symptoms weren't so bad. It was like a bad cold. So we never ended up spilling back into previous protocols. We got close. So we're still telling people to be safe and hoping people are vaccinated, but we have not reestablished any of the older COVID protocols. On the budget update, are there any questions? About COVID, okay. So then on the budget, I'm just looking, I had it up. We're really stable. Just to remind people, ADS is about $100 million agency, and about 70 million of that comes from the federal government. A big part of the federal funding goes to our Disability Determination Bureau. That's 100% federally funded by Social Security. And then of course, VR programs have a match. I think Mary, correct me, I think about 78, 22, almost 4-to-1 match. So a huge amount of our money comes from the Fed, 70 million out of 100, I'm rounding. And so there's about $30 million in state dollars, 29.4 to be exact, for next year. And I'll just say that some of those accounts are blended, like payroll and what have you, and they supplement the VR and the other federal programs. Chris's program gets federal money. But I'll just say that for next year, there'll be $4.5 million for the Children's Services account, $4.5 million, and there'll be $240,000 for special training for the deaf-blind. That's been at a high of $297,000, but it's also gone much lower, and now it seems to be stable at about $240,000. There's a line item of $70,194 that goes to Chris Radio. Our state budget funds are about $29.4 million. Our total spending is over $100 million, with the federal dollars that come in, and we are stable. And last, I'll say that the Pepsi-Cola account that BEP signed a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I think on July 1st it'll be 2 years, is coming in much more strong. We are at this point seemingly comfortable with the revenue we get from the Pepsi-Cola contract. And then, of course, we get a check every year from the DOT for in lieu of us operating at the Turnpike rest stops. They just cut us a check of, I think it's $600,000, $400,000. I just forgot, but maybe Tyrell knows. So financially, we're doing okay. Are there any questions about that? And then on the legislative update, there are a number of bills passed that I track dealing with senior citizens, dealing with deaf issues. But the two issues that might be of interest to us are the service animal bill, which was going to say that service animals they're going to stop calling them guide dogs and call them service animals to be in line with the federal government's definition and the name that the federal government uses. And it may have had some effect in sorting out the issues of companion animals and emotional support animals. That bill ended up dying. I think it's actually some game playing at the very end of the session. I don't think the bill was opposed, but at one point near the end of session, when tempers rise, the Senate will kill House bills and the House will kill Senate bills, and the Senate killed this bill. And I don't think for any reason other than it was a House bill and they were being childish and petulant. Don't quote me on that. But so the bill may come up again next year to define guide dogs as service animals and to use the federal definition. And then last, if there's a question on that, please let me know. And I don't hear much. Oh, last.
Excuse me, Andrew, it's Randa. Now, I don't have all the details, but I was told by someone who was following that service dog for service animal bill very closely that what happened after it got rejected at the end of the last night, someone cleverly took most of the provisions in it, not all the provisions, but most of the provisions, and incorporated it into another bill, which did pass, but I can't say, I don't know what the bill was that they incorporated it into.
And I thought that that had happened too, Rand, and I went looking for that other bill and I couldn't find it. But based on what you're telling me, I will look again, because I thought that it happened, but I'm going to have to hunt more effectively than I did. My hunt I didn't find it, so I thought it hadn't happened, though it was happening. But based on what you're saying, I will look again and I will send an email out to the board with what I find. So thank you.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
No, truly, thank you for that.
Sure.
And then last, you know that there was a bill about the library for the blind, and that there are some people who are upset about how the things were developing at the state library with the Library for the Blind subsidiary of the state library. But then a lot of people came forward and said, no, we like the library. We got no complaints. And in fact, this board itself took a position saying, don't do that bill, don't disrupt. And the bill was to move the state library for the blind to us and out of the state library. That bill didn't pass, but what they did was pass this language, and it's short, so I'll read it to you. The state library board shall consult with the advisory committee to the Library for the Blind and the Commissioner of Aging and Disability Services before taking any action that may diminish or substantively change the library services for the blind.
They moved to Middletown.
Yes, and that made some people mad, although other people reflected on the fact that since it's all done by mail, it doesn't matter where they are. I mean, over the years, there was a big change. The federal government said, send us back all those tapes because we're moving to a different system, and they're our property. So the need for the big library in Rocky Hill, I guess, I'm told, went away. And a lot of volunteers would come and help with that inventory, but the inventory isn't there anymore. I went with Commissioner Porter because she was interested, and we took a tour of the new Library for the Blind setting in Middletown. and a bit south of the hospital in Wesleyan. And we saw what they do. And what they do is, if Andrew Norton says, I want to see Huck Finn and Tropic of Cancer, they then download that onto a tape, up to 10 books. And they've got a loading dock, and they have the post office come by a couple times a week at least, and they mail out all of these tapes to people who already have the tape players. I don't think that's the right terminology, the tape player, but and they do it by mail. And actually, I'll say that to some extent, you got a better than me. If I got to go to the library to get a book. By the way, I'm not resentful of that in any way. I won't trade my position for blindness. But I will say that because it's kind of the way it has to be, it ends up being like home delivery. And a lot of people think it's a pretty good system. So what they settled on was to say that the state library must consult the advisory committee, which committee felt unconsulted and uninformed, and consult Amy, well, or whoever is Amy as commissioner, before they make any big changes. So, in essence, the state library should not make any big changes about the blind services without checking in with the advisory committee to the blind library and to the commissioner of aging and disability services, presumably because she would have the ability to talk with blind people and find out what they think of any proposal. And they also put a separate budget line of $100,000 in the state library budget. Now, the state library budget had the money for the state library for the blind, but that money wasn't differentiated in the budget. You didn't see it. So next year, there'll be a $100,000 line item for the library for the blind in the state library's budget that stands apart and is noticeable to anyone looking at a budget sheet that they've got that money. So that's what resulted. They backed off of the proposal to move the library and all of that, and they leaned in with this idea that there should be consultation by the state library before they make any big changes. And that's now law.
Could I just ask, this is Eileen, that exact wording be quoted in the minutes of this advisory board meeting?
Okay, what I will do is, I will cut, but what if I do this? If I cut the paragraph out and it's the new language is underlined, is that something that is accessible to people reading this through whatever adaptive?
No, using? Not underlined.
No, it's not.
Okay,
no.
What would I? Okay, well then I'll just cut the new language. I'll just do the new language, and I'm going to send that to Zach and have him, instead of having to like write down what I said. Because I didn't cut it perfectly. I'm going to send that to Zach, and he will. Zach, are you there?
Yeah, if you send that to me, I'll include it in the minutes, word for word, whatever you send.
I'm going to try to do that now.
That would be appreciated, because there's still a lot of discussion about LBPH, and this having that exact information would be most helpful. Thank you very much.
Happy to do that, Eileen. I'll take another second to put the bill number in case anyone wanted to go looking. So that's my legislative report. Again, the AHC was involved and engaged in bills regarding people who are deaf. We made some changes to the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Advisory Board membership, and some changes to the interpreter standards, and also. There were a couple of changes that in the area of senior citizens, senior centers, aging. I'll pass over those and just talk about the two blind things that I talked about. So that's my report. Any questions? Certainly, I'm happy to.
Questions for Andrew? Any of those three items? Only twice.
Al, can you put those in the minutes, please?
Sure.
Because I was just wondering is there any impact on our advisory committee regarding interpreters or regarding deafblind attending the meetings?
Well, let me say that I recommended a change. I'll just say this. Brian had felt it was important to have interpreters at all of these meetings. And I'll say that I observed that it had been many, many meetings before anyone, without anyone deaf showing up or even asking for an accommodation. So I recommended switching to not automatically having interpreters, which, by the way, also allows you to stray past 12 o'clock.
Which I wanted to do, yeah.
When we engaged interpreters, you had to shut up at 12 o'clock. I mean, that was too rude. That you had to adjourn. You had to adjourn by 12 o'clock, which maybe is a good goal anyways, and maybe the chairman liked being able to tell everyone, you know, we got to go. But I noticed that over some years even, that there wasn't any deaf person who had showed up. We do, when we announce the meetings, invite people to request an accommodation, including specifically sign language interpreting, should they plan to attend the meeting. And we're prepared to hire people if a request is made. But, you know, it's not a prince's ransom, but it's real money that got spent. And I noticed over several meetings, the deaf interpreters were just, you know, sitting there. And so if it comes to pass that you get regular interest from people who are deaf who want interpreting, then we should certainly resume. But it hasn't happened in the last three meetings or four since I sort of got pulled up a bit in my level of involvement. So just to say, and no, the legislation doesn't, that got passed regarding deaf stuff doesn't make any changes that would affect that.
My question, Andrew, is it, it requires what, 2 to 3 weeks to order an interpreter, then we should put that on our, in our, when we send out the agenda saying, you know, if interpreters are needed, this is how much time you need in order to request it.
Yeah, you're right about that. You are right about that.
That is at the bottom of every agenda. Just says that, you know, reply by this date if you want an interpreter. The only worry I have with regard to interpreters, that the general proposition is last minute requests. Somebody will decide that, you know, on the day before the meeting, that, oh my God, this is an important meeting, I need an interpreter, and getting one here could be a dicey proposition. So that's, I think that is why Brian had us have interpreters standing by, because it's very hard to get an interpreter on short notice.
And I know the SRC, for example, also, and I checked with and BRS, for example, they have a state rehabilitation council. And BRS, deaf people are their clients, right? More than there are clients in VR, and much more. I mean, that's, and they don't do it in their SRC, nor did we in our SRC.
Right.
We did it for the Besby Board. I believe there was a time when someone who was deaf showed up, and it was plenty awkward, and Brian thought it made sense to avoid any repetition of that. And I guess it was my recommendation that the money spent, and no, that hadn't happened again in a couple, 3 years or something.
Yeah,
you know, like, and maybe, I don't know, so there's that judgment. I don't know.
It's a Andrew, this is Eileen. I agree with you. I think, just as even with me, if I want something in Braille, I need something in Braille, I can't expect it to be ready the next day. So if it's clearly stated in the at the in the agenda, at the bottom of the agenda, that you must send in your request by such and such a date, if people don't adhere to that, then that's unfortunate.
Come on them, yeah.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. Very good. All right. Any other questions for Andrew? Okay. I'm going to move on to the points of in welfare, and I have a bittersweet item, bitter for us, and sweet for the person who is the subject of said announcement, which is you, Andrew. Andrew is going to be retiring as of 1st July, and I would like to be the first to say that
while it's certainly not easy, but it's easier to replace the legal talent that Andrew has provided for us as our legislative liaison, it is going to be much more difficult, likely impossible, to replace the personality who comes with that expertise. It's been a delight working with you the last 15 years, Andrew. I am going to miss your sense of humor, and I think I will be putting forward in that regard when I say I'm going to miss your sense of humor along with your commitment to the cause and to the agency and to those of us in the blindness community. And I would like to say also that I'm speaking for the committee when I say we wish you the best of health, prosperity, and lots of interesting and fun projects as you embark on this next chapter in your life. Thank you very much, and wish you the best going forward.
Thank you.
Yes.
By the way, we're putting a good sense of humor in preferred job qualifications. Maybe a graduate of a particular comedy school or something like that. that would be preferred. I can't guarantee it.
Yeah.
You know, the advantage to working with lawyers is because words are the tools of their profession, they generally do have a pretty good sense of humor. There are exceptions, of course, and some are better at it than others, you being among the better ones.
Yes.
But, it kind of comes with the territory.
So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out for us, but you're very much going to be missed, and it's been a delight working with you last year.
Yes,
this is Randa. I want to ditto that, Andrew. I've known you since you were a state representative and chief of staff, and more closely as this role at BSBE and ADS, and I will definitely miss you a lot, and you've been great. Thank you.
I just want to say quickly, I'll miss working with the people I've gotten to know at BSBE, and times 80, it was 100, now about 80 people, and I like all of them, I think, and but I know it's 98%, and I've enjoyed working with the board members, especially some of the newbies like Al and Eileen. But it's been it's good people doing good work, and I just want to say, some years ago I was talking to a friend of mine at DMV. I was doing some work with them, maybe about licensing or something, and she said one of her coworkers who was sort of not loving her job there said, "Wow, wouldn't it be nice to work there? At least at the end of the day, you helped a blind person. What the hell?" And one of the things I've noticed is that in every state agency, people think they work in a place that, you probably know this, out where people talk about, and they complain about what they're doing and what. I don't mean to oversell that point, but and even here, some people say, it's so ridiculous at times, this rule or that person. But the fact of the matter is that we are one of those agencies where people, and even the back office people, like me, sort of, can point to real help that got to people with real need. And I didn't come into this because I knew anything about blindness, because I knew legislative stuff. But it was nice to be part of an effort that helps real people with real needs.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, will you be staying on as Chris Radio Board member?
Well, Diane has asked me to. That's not up to her. I wasn't feeling like I needed to quit.
You'll stay.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, because I've been working with you as the co-chairman.
Steve and I serve as the governance committee of the Chris Radio Board.
Okay.
They're lucky to have you guys.
Yeah.
Both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any further points to the good and welfare?
Yes, this is Eileen. I have a couple of things.
Sure.
First, I think it's well known that through Brian Signet's efforts, there was an agreement reached between the Department of Transportation and IRA, which is a service that so that people with smartphones can get